Look, this isn't a Romulan labor camp. I don't have to answer your questions. I don't give a damn what you think.
Again, welcome to On Point with your host, Don Allen, and in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, it's a beautiful day in sunny Minneapolis. How are you?
Don, I'm fine. Temperature's 84 degrees here in the Twin Cities. Beautiful, beautiful day. Beautiful blue sky. Sun's out. The kind of day that a summer should provide, if you will, as it pertains to comfort and et cetera. Unfortunately, Don, we've got some problems here in our beloved state. State government has closed down.
Yes, it has.
We have a mirror image here of what could happen in Washington, D.C. in about a month if we happen to forfeit or default, as they like to say, default on America's obligations on the big money market. I mean the real, real, real big money market. And the president and the Congress, the Republicans, don't seem to be able to get it together. But here in Minnesota, our beloved Minnesota, the governor looks like he was a little bit tougher than what the Republicans thought he was going to be. And I understand we're going to have some reflections by some conservative observers about what the heck happened here. But what I'd like to do is a quick piece on the international scene. Interesting.
Yes, please.
Speech in Tripoli, Libya yesterday from Muammar Gaddafi. You remember Muammar Gaddafi? What was it, 3 months ago on these programs?
Yeah.
You were
yes.
being told to report that Muammar Gaddafi was about to fall, had fallen, was falling, had fallen again, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
yesterday from a secure facility somewhere, I assume in Libya, Muammar Gaddafi said that it could very well be the intention of Libya and her supporters to bring the war to Europe, if you will. And that's not a very pleasant thought for a lot of the European countries, particularly given the kind of financial strife they're in.
Yes.
But the situation with Gaddafi is interesting. The NATO military might, if you will, the most powerful military organization on the face of the planet, according to their PR people, have been pounding Gaddafi and his forces. Yet yesterday, Gaddafi's forces routed some of the rebels/insurgents. He's continued to carry out his activities. His war machine, though damaged and maybe tilting, is continuing to be a source of embarrassment for NATO, and that includes the United States. We are a member of the North American organization. So this declaration by Gaddafi yesterday from a secure location that he is prepared and that NATO, the United States, are waging war upon civilians non-military targets, that maybe it's time to bring this kind of military conflict home to Europe, if you will. And, boy, that's caused some shaking to go on. So, anyways, on that international scene, we don't seem to be getting a lot of traction. And, by the way, Republicans in a ceremonial vote earlier in the week, Don, chastised President Barack Obama for violating the War Powers Act.
Mm-hmm.
And indicated that this president had stepped out of line constitutionally and did not have the necessary authority to commit American military to the conflict, and that means military presence. The president has said that we have no military personnel on the ground. I know that that's not true. You know that's not true.
Exactly.
There have been American military personnel and CIA operatives. In fact, let us just play this right quick.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said the NATO mission is on track and again called for Gaddafi to step down.
Instead of issuing threats, Gaddafi should put the well-being and the interests of his own people first, and he should step down from power and help facilitate a democratic transition.
Don, doesn't that sound familiar? That's the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in Madrid, Spain, once again calling for Gaddafi to step down. CNN carrying the headline as we complete this, Gaddafi threatens Europe. Who would have thought it? Why, just 3 months ago, as we said at the top of this particular item, that we were being told that Gaddafi was all through.
Yes, 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 we were. And, you know, a former friend of the United States, now turned radical enemy. So we got to watch that closely, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, what do we got locally, Darren? I know that with the state government closed down, what the heck have we got?
Well, you know, we got a lot on our plate today for the show. You know, and we'll get into pieces of this, but, you know, FEMA has said no to North Minneapolis. The prestigious Minneapolis Foundation remains under serious pressure to fund an ill-conceived proposal by the Northside Community Response Team, led by the Pillsbury United Communities. And our advice to the Minneapolis Foundation is to stand strong. The action that they've taken to this point is going to assist in changing the paradigm of a codependent, nonprofit, welfare-fed system that has forgot the mission of helping people while never coming up with creative ways to solve disparities in the community. Plus, you know, Mr. Edwards, we were at a meeting with the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights this week for the disparity report.
On Tuesday evening at the Central Library in beautiful downtown Minneapolis. Yes, we were, Mr. Allen.
Yes,
go right
yes,
ahead.
Yes, and, you know, we had tons of people, and I'm being facetious because only 25 people showed up.
Yes,
this is very important. And missing was the NAACP, the Minneapolis Urban League, the National Association of Minority Contractors, and all these agencies that are supposedly our civil rights agency. And later, if we have time later in the show, I want to play something by Star Parker out of California. But in the meantime, Mr. Edwards, you know, a young lady came and spoke to the Northside Community Response Team on this past Wednesday, and I think she wrapped it up in a nutshell, and I do have that recording, and I was wondering, you know, I think this would be a pretty good time to play it so people can hear it.
This is an African-American woman, I think first name Renee, and she's basically been a lifetime and lifelong member of North Minneapolis, seemed to be in, you know, I don't like to insult, I know how women are about their age, but seemed to be in her early 40s, mid-40s, would we agree?
Yes, we would agree.
And Mr. Allen is going to play some excerpts from some statements that she made to the powerful, powerful Northside Tornado Recovery Team led by Major Lewis King, United States Army Artillery. Go ahead.
Here we go.
In this room has stressed this out, but me. I do have a granddaughter, and I'm not going to put my granddaughter through these things. All I'm asking for is me a home to stay and me a good place to eat. But you know what? Since I'm coming from the country, I'm wiser than that. But I remember the North Side used to be so close together. So now it's in tore apart. I've been here since the 60s. I grew up right here in this building. I remember when it was the drugstore, Payless, Red Isle, the washing machine. When you wash clothes and I stay right there in the back of the garage. So all this mess going on with the state of Hennepin County, they're full of it. Cause it ain't never done nothing like this a day in my life. And it hurts me. It hurts me to especially see my black people like this. And the only ones helping me is Eve and Red Cross. I thank them and I thank North Carolina. Because I grew up there, too. A lot of us got responsibilities. We ain't the only one got responsibilities. And I'm trying to figure out where is all this money going. It didn't go to the victims.
Amen.
It did not go to the victims at all. And I'm thankful with my black folks. I'm thankful with my white folks. Because this did not go on in the 60s or the 70s. Everybody had it together. Ain't nobody better than one. Now, what if somebody today, some God just come by and just saw my cure out? You'll see the same feeling I got. Because I'm hurting by it. And I mean, I'm hurting by it. Right is right, wrong is wrong. And I know I'm paying $650,000 for the victim. Where is that money at? Where is it at? I want to know where it is. I'm tired of being tired. The North Side is not like it used to be. And I want to hear some answers. Everybody all I had to say. God bless all y'all.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the young lady that came and spoke for the North Side.
Let us repeat again, Mr. Allen, a lifetime resident of North Minneapolis. In fact, used to go to the drugstore that used to be located many years ago in the building that is now the facility of the powerful OIC under the leadership of Major Louis King, United States Army Artillery, if you will. Clearly, this lady knows the community. She said a couple things which caught my attention, Mr. Allen, and by the way, we heard applause in the background, but we should tell our listening audience that there were some very mean mugging, intense mean mugging going on of her and other victims who had come unannounced to the meeting of the powerful Northside Tornado relief team, if you will. And I have to say this, Mr. Allen, I'm obligated. During our production meeting over the last 2 days, I said to you and our production staff that I would have to point out that I found it rather disingenuous at best. There are other reflections, but because this is a family program, I will not use them over the air. I found it regrettable that Mr. King and others concurred with him, immediately raised the question of mental derangement and the fact that before people came to meetings, be it at the meeting last Saturday at North High School or even this particular meeting, that they needed to take their meds, which implied that the statements that we were hearing were from people who had mental health problems. And I was bothered by that, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly.
We had a number of little stories told to us, but I was bothered. I thought that was disingenuous at best and cowardly at worst, if you will.
I agree 100%. But, you know, that is something, and I would like to reflect on a couple of things that the young lady said, too. But on continuing on your line of thinking there, Mr. Edwards, this is something that has been used in not only the Black community but around the board. If you have a voice, if you say something and you don't go along with the flow, you have to have some kind of mental illness. And I'm happy to tell those in power at the Northside community response team that, you know, I did not take any medication this morning because I am not on any medication. And I will continue this track, you know, letting people know what's going on in the community. And the young lady pointed to something good. She said she does not know, quote, what is wrong with our Black people. She thanks Elam Transitional Housing and the American Red Cross. And I would like to stay in that area for a minute, if you will, Mr. Edwards, because we found out 2.5 weeks ago on a Wednesday that there are not any African American or Black, whichever you choose to use, transitional housing agencies in North Minneapolis. So
absolutely correct.
Yeah, virtually the people that were affected, the large majority in Minneapolis, were of African-American descent. They were renters. 70-80% were renters, and a lot of the homeowners did not have insurance. So there was not a Urban League, an NAACP, a Sabathany, or a Stairstep Foundation, or a North Point that they could turn to and immediately get in housing. Now, I'm going to give some credit to Pillsbury United Communities because at least they did pay for some hotel rooms. But still, this is a heinous oversight in our community. Housing in a poor community, and I compared this, Mr. Edwards. I looked at Houston, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, Newark, New York, or Newark, New Jersey. In the New York, I looked at the Bronx and Queens. I went to Denver, went to Denver, Colorado, looked at that. Actually, I used to live in Denver, so I knew a lot about what was going on there. Seattle, Washington, and San Francisco, California. Every one of those cities that I just mentioned, Mr. Edwards, has maybe 3 to 12, San Francisco was 12, transitional housing services or nonprofit agencies, which actively, that was outside of the range of chemical dependency. So you had people that were homeless, you know, maybe because of their things they've done, or maybe because not because of things they've done, just because of life circumstances or illness or whatever. But
whatever their afflictions are.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so all these agencies, cities around the states have handfuls that deal with going in and buying properties from the city, okay, follow me on this, and remodeling the properties and putting people in the homes that need the homes at a low cost. Of course, there's some qualifications for that, but at least they have transitional temporary housing where if you can't afford it, hey, we have a house for you here until you get back up on your feet. We are here in Minneapolis, especially in North Minneapolis, we are denied that opportunity. You know, the land banking and the housing trusts are all ran by sub-city agencies that, you know, the African-American population are just not, you know, aware of and don't even look into it. And so we have nothing here for our people at all whatsoever. Now, you let this happen to some Asians, some Jewish people, some Hispanic people. I mean, you're going to see them put in housing immediately around the board. But us, we have nothing here. And she also alluded to, well, she spoke on the $50,000 that Comcast, the cable company here, the cable company giant here in Minnesota as well all around the country, had donated for the victims. And I actually tried to call Comcast. Well, I did call Comcast on Friday because there was a big celebratory a posting on the Comcast blog that says, hey, we gave $50,000 to the North Minneapolis tornado victims, and you had Councilman Don Samuels, State Representative 58B, Bobby Joe Champion. You had Sherman Patterson in the picture. You had Linda Higgins. And you had all these political do-what-nots in this picture. But still, that amount of money cannot be tracked from Comcast to a victim, period.
Well, you know, in the committee that Mr. Allen is talking about, the Northside Tornado Recovery Team is the actual name. Now, by the way, not to be confused with the Minneapolis Recovery Fund, if you will, which has been funding a lot of different organizations as early as the 26th and 27th of May. What has basically come out of this, what you've said, Mr. Allen, is that we are basically told within the committee and other stratas, if you will, that these are not appropriate questions at this time. Those are after the fact. Things become after the fact before they become a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened is that the lady in question, I'll refer to her as Renee, really put her finger on a question because, you know, actually there's more than 50,000. I think that we know that there's close to a million that has gone to entities that are supposedly under the control of the African-American community and its leadership. I know you, Mr. Allen, volunteered to conduct a examination, if you will, of how the money's that were being raised, how they were being spent. I noticed that you haven't received any administrative assistance or help. Mr. Allen, by the way, has tracked at least six fundraisers that have taken place in which a significant amount of dollars were raised, yet no one is able to account for it. Now, you know, we have a situation in which OIC, Urban League, Urban Homeworks and others are saying that they're going to, by July 11th, that they're going to put 150 to 200 youth, primarily African American, to work, but that they right now are $350,000 to $400,000 short of doing that. And by the way, they're going to put them to work at about $7.25 an hour. The adults allegedly would be put to work for $14 an hour, though there seems to be no real effort. And when the questions came up from the victims of the tornado on Wednesday at OIC, I thought that there was less than transparency, if you will. But what has been said is that $350,000 at minimum is going to be raised to employ. Now, what's troubling about this, Mr. Allen, and just seconds ago you spoke on the fact that there is you know, housing construction and et cetera going on, but no one can find any record of African Americans being able to access it, is that there right now are federal contracts in excess of $1.4 million in excess right now that are at play and in the hands of some of those who have been in the meetings. In fact, some who are members of the so-called core group, and we need to talk about that on today's program, the core group and the statements that emerged in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune under the FEMA denies appeal. By the way, I mean, that is the denial of an appeal, so I asked Mr. Allen the question before we went on the air. Is there an appeal to the appeal? What's your take, Mr. Allen?
Well, you know, as a result of FEMA denying it, as predicted by us on June 14th, Mr. Edwards, and also in a story titled "The North Minneapolis in the Year 2014, 3 years after Tornado Nancy," as some community members are calling it, who stayed at the Armory, that would be the end of the appeal. You know that we had on the 20th of June, the mainstream media, including Minnesota Public Radio, Star and Tribune, Channel 9, posted stories that our beloved Mayor R.T. Ryback was flying out to Washington, D.C. To ask President Obama to give more aid to North Minneapolis. And it made it seem, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, this mayor was actually, you know, wholeheartedly going out there just for that purpose. And after a little bit more digging, we uncovered that it was the Baltimore, the 75th annual mayor's meeting in Baltimore, Maryland.
Conference of Mayors, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Out in, and this was spun perfectly by his administration and staff to make it seem like he was going on a mission of mercy for North Minneapolis. But we know at the end of it, President Obama can't take a direct request, really, from the mayor. It has to come from the governor. So R.T. Ryback really had no skin in the game other than some personal affiliation with President Obama, which turns out today, based on the Star and Tribune story and the different articles that we have put up, that there is no money for residents and uninsured homeowners in North Minneapolis from FEMA, period.
And again, for our listening audience, both nationally and internationally, this story is contained in today's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Saturday's edition, on the Metro page, as it is referred to. And the title is FEMA Denies Appeal for Individual Aid. And it's rather an interesting story, by the way, for listeners and those that were in the chat room as we were getting ready to go on the air. You know, our number is 1-800-572-4288. That's correct, Mr. Allen?
It's actually 877.
I'm sorry.
Yes. You can call in. It's 877-572-4288. That is a toll-free number, and I'll give that to you one more time. And it is posted up in the chat room. It is 877-572-4288. And if you'd like to call in and ask questions, challenge us, we invite you because this needs to be discussed, and we really would appreciate your telephone call. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Well, we certainly would, particularly in light of the question that has come up about a early funding that the so-called core group of the committee has, I won't even say they've deferred it. They've just basically said that it's not under discussion, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. In which, what bothered Mr. Allen and myself was that on the 27th of May, one of the stories that we heard, and we heard it repeated with even greater passion on the 9th of June, was that allegedly some Pacific minority, quote-unquote, contractors were doing work, tarping and repairing out of their pockets and et cetera, and, of course, they would be reimbursed at some other time. And we broke the story here at On Point and on other mediums that we have under our control, and that was that at least $206,000 had been made available by the Minneapolis Foundation and the United Way to, example, $60,000 to urban homework, $50,000 for repairs and et cetera, in concert with the minority contractors, and then $10,000 to help minority contractors get their house in order with respect to certification, being able to meet both federal and state statutes, if you will. On at least 9 occasions recorded by Mr. Allen and other individuals or operatives that we have in the meetings, we have asked the question, is there a report? Can we find out? Because we have found out in the June 3rd status update that the committee that we are involved with, and I think Mr. Allen and I both are going to be purged from this committee pretty quick, that this committee received certainly as much as $100,000, and that part of it was that we were to repair 30 to 50 homes. Am I correct, Mr. Allen? Because
yeah,
if anyone
right.
challenges us, we will continue to produce the evidence. In fact, on these programs 2 Saturdays ago, we referred people to the website of the Minneapolis Recovery Fund. Oops.
Yes.
We've had 5 meetings since then of the committee. There is no response. There is no question. We continue to hear the fact that these efforts that were mounted, particularly during the week of the 22nd of May, were done gratis, if you will, almost like pro bono, if you
mm-hmm.
will. People were taking money out of their pockets. In fact, we even heard that statement made to African-American contractors on the 9th of June at Heritage Village. And all that's untrue. And so I'm like you, Mr. Allen. When I heard Renee ask the question that this African-American woman, grandmother, as she pointed out, asked that question, it was met with silence and disdain. And then, as I said earlier, I repeat it again, that I found it rather disingenuous that the next statement out of the mouths of the leadership of the group was that people needed to control their emotions and take their medication before they came to meetings.
Yeah.
And I don't know what warranted that other than a put-down. I've seen that tactic used in military operations. I know that philosophy is taught at the war colleges. Oops. And I'm quite cognizant and aware of it. But at this point, you know, Mr. Allen, a lot of money has allegedly been sent into the African-American community. Now, for the last 2 years, you, Mr. Allen, have been pointing out oftentimes to the disdain of folks, some who sit right in the meetings with us, that $90 million had already been poured into North Minneapolis over a very short period of time, the last year or so. And I would have thought that some of that $90 million would have positioned us not to be confronted with some of these problems that we've been pointing out here on Point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100% with you, Mr. Edwards, but the fact of the matter is that if you have a financial flow of dollars or financial infrastructure that large that is flowing money into 150, 200-plus nonprofits, and 90 to 95% of that is going into administrative costs with people making in excess of $160,000 a year, which are executive directors. And I don't want people to get me wrong. I'm believing black capitalism, and I don't run a nonprofit, and I believe in making money. But the thing is, what goes to the people? What dollars gets to the people? And we've had several examples of that in Minneapolis. The empowerment zone money, the foreclosure money, where nothing actually went, a grant went to a homeowner. It went to the city, and the city hired people that worked for predatory lenders and to counsel black folks that were losing their house in North Minneapolis, which was one of the highest hit for areas of foreclosure in the United States. And so still, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So again, on your point, Mr. Edwards, you know, you can. This is something that you can throw a lot of money at and still not see any results based on the current infrastructure setup. My second point,
as we pointed out, Mr. Allen, that not only does it raise serious questions, if you will, of transparency and integrity and et cetera, as we pointed out in our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, oldest black paper in the state of Minnesota. I've said to you before, Don, you know, that this is part of gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that will also bring us to something else that the committee has refused to discuss, though a white political appointed leader indicated to the group upon a question posed by us here at On Point that there is a provision in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Ordinance which indicates what is called right of return.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, in the last 10 days or so, it has been conveyed to me that the ordinance dealing with right of return will, in fact, not be implemented, and that there is a well-crafted, well-grounded plan to make sure that African Americans are not allowed to return to North Minneapolis as they are being scattered to the four winds.
Exactly, and that has a lot to do, Mr. Edwards, with the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, who has not addressed the city ordinance as it pertains to the right of return, nor have they enforced or monitored contract compliance in North Minneapolis. What can we expect, out of a Ryback-controlled city department? Because, the marching orders have already been given, and it's a stand-down has been issued. So, we're looking at a situation where it is a lose-lose, because you would think that a proactive civil rights department would say, hey, these people have the right to return, but that's not the case. This is a mayor-driven, one of the few city departments that the mayor controls. They report to the mayor.
Yeah, under the charter of the city of Minneapolis, he controls only the civil rights department and the fire department.
Yeah.
Not even the police department.
Yeah.
Though he nominates the chief for both departments, but he technically does not control the police department. The city council and the city coordinator do. It's the damnedest thing you ever want to see.
Yeah, yeah. And so, with that said, we're looking at some straight up hopelessness here as far as letting people return. And I'm pretty sure in that ordinance, I haven't read it yet, Mr. Edwards, but I'm pretty sure there's a piece in there about, people being able to come back into the community at the levels they were in the community before the disaster.
That is absolutely correct. And as the individual that helped draft that language many, many, many years ago, one of the roles that I have served in, I was chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, a non-paying position, by the way, on two separate occasions in a 20-year period in the 1960s. We put those provisions into the ordinance, if you will, the right of return. We had a pitched battle in the late 1980s and early 1990s as the city prepared for the demolition of public housing in North Minneapolis and what was supposed to be affordable housing, now called Heritage Park and some others. And what happened there, the Democratic machine here in the city of Minneapolis basically gutted the ordinances and provisions of right of return, if you will. I still have to indicate that I think it was on the June, County Commissioner Mark Stanglein actually was the person that called attention to the fact that 12,000 African Americans had disappeared over the last year, per se, if you will. Now, I hear a lot of discussion about that we're going to spend the next 36 months allegedly looking for 5,000, which is interesting, if you will. But let me ask you a question, Mr. Allen. The article in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune with respect to FEMA, did you get the feeling that leadership who have positioned themselves, that they ever made their concerns known and that they personally, along with the mayor, attempted to lobby, which they have a constitutional right to do that they ever lobbied FEMA to make FEMA understand the importance of individual grants to a besieged and beleaguered community? Did you get that feeling? Did I miss that in reading the article this morning?
I did not get the feeling that these people that were quoted on behalf of the community and the 16 families still in shelters as of the 29th of June, that they lobbied or put FEMA in front of the task force. And this seems to be a core problem with some of them in the core group, because, no, to answer your question just flat out, Mr. Edwards, I did not get that feeling that they did due diligence on behalf of the community. And there's two pieces, there's two pieces to that, I think. I think part of it is, again, you have the DFL political plantation that has given marching orders to these guys, and they're not going to stray away from it because, you know, eventually down the line it benefits them. So
yes, it does. And I'll tell you what is of greater interest and troubling to me is, you know, I hear all this wolfing that goes on about black bloggers here. And yet I see no calls. I don't see the switchboard lighting up. And so, again, let's do this. The call-in number is 877-572-4288. It's Don and Ron. And any questions that you may have about this? You know, one of the things that's clear to me, Mr. Allen, is that the design plan, though certainly it's not a plan that will help the victims, the design plan would seem to indicate that there's a possibility of big money in that can be obtained in this situation without helping the people. Do you understand how I'm saying that to you,
oh, yeah,
sir?
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just think that folks have visions. Let's just go back to the job thing. As we said earlier, we thought maybe we'd get a response here at On Point. OIC, Urban League, others are saying that they will put 150 to 200 youth, primary American, to work by June 11th. In fact, they will be using some Homeland Security monies from the Park Board, yet when we asked that question in the meeting Wednesday about specific details, a formal resolution from the Park Board, and et cetera, we were told that we had misheard what had been said. Wasn't that correct? Though you have captured it on video and audio, right?
And audio, yes, sir. Yes, I have.
But we were told. Also, one of the things that I found amazing, we made the mistake for our listening audience of asking about the hourly wage, and we made the mistake of asking about benefits because both Mr. Allen and I came out of corporate America, and so we know how important benefits are in corporate America, you know what I'm saying? And we were told by the core group in a core response that benefits was not anything they were interested in pursuing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of selfish, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
I mean, there are some folks that have been receiving the best of benefits and et cetera basically all their lives. I mean, there are some that, for example, I mean, people that have served in the military,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe since age 19 or 18, now in their 40s, I mean, they have enjoyed the benefits that are afforded to you and your family and et cetera.
Yes.
And why is it that there is so much hostility towards the people, contrary to what's being said and contrary to the barbecues and things like that allegedly
yeah.
are
yeah. Hey, Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Oh, let's get him in. Let's get him in.
Okay. Hello. Who's calling? You're live on the air. Hello? Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Okay.
The background, because we are using some special equipment that we brought in, that the noise in the background, which sounds like automobiles going at a high rate of speed over highway, this is the sixth time that we received that same kind of background.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's the sixth time that call with that background has come in. So maybe the person needs to get their technical abilities together and, you know, after dialing, be able to speak. But
put your earbud in. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But this equipment that we've had brought in, some excellent equipment. Actually, it's used by some of our friends at Fort Huachuca down in Arizona, which that's where a lot of the intercepts take place, Don.
Yes, yes.
Electronic intercepts and et cetera. And somebody, you know, made us aware of. And it's legal. It's legal if you know where to get it, go get it on the market. And we've been recording as well as we're able to identify where numbers are coming from, even when they attempt to block them. But anyways, we just, you know, wanted to lay that out. But anyways, we should have about 150 to 200 African-American youth working by the 11th. Is that your understanding, Mr. Allen? Because maybe I'm mishearing and maybe I'm too emotionally tied in and didn't have my meds, if you will.
Yeah.
Is that your understanding and recollection?
Yeah, that is my understanding. Somehow they're going to put off this huge coup and have these youth working. But, Mr. Edwards, again, we have to look at the historical data on we're going to have jobs, quote. Okay, and you know, in 2008, we're going to have 2,000 people working in the summer or in the fall, or actually in the spring. We're going to have 2,000 people working in 2009. We're going to have 1,500 people working in 2010 in the spring. We're going to have 2,000 people and 500 women working. And it's surprising, Mr. Edwards, because I went over 3 years' worth of information, and it's coming from members in the core group.
Yes, it is, Mr. Allen, as well as documentation that we have in hand, which was actually paid for by the municipality called the City of Minneapolis with $500,000 of taxpayers' monies. The disparity study shows an inconsistent pattern with respect to those pronouncements that we're going to have 2,000 here, 2,000 there, 3,000 here, 1,500 there. And it's coming from individuals in the so-called core group as they discuss our commitment to core issues such as employment, you know, meaningful, prevailing wage, you know, important word, prevailing wage, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know both you and I have talked about this in production meetings and et cetera. I'm troubled by it. You know, we have not chose to put the big book on the table. I know that behind our backs we are being accused of being, you know, doo-doo stirrers and mm-hmm. creating problems and et cetera, you know. I don't think anybody, though, has said we're not telling the truth.
No, they've never said that, but I kind of like the doo-doo stirrers thing.
yeah, you know, and we understand what the other word is.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I have to say in that we have command of the command center. This is our command center. This is our CNC, control and command. The Urban League and others are saying that these youth will work directly through public works. Am I correct, Mr. Allen? I'm going to kind of do like an attorney. I'm going to ask you, is that correct?
Yes.
That you understand?
Yeah.
Now, the Public Works Department, all records show the Public Works Department is one of the worst departments in the employment of African Americans, just as bad as the Minnesota Department of Transportation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we asked the question on the Wednesday prior when the mayor came in and gave us his sing-song. We asked the question on Monday, and we asked the question again on Wednesday of this week. How and what guarantees were there that the unions, as well as contractors currently under contract with the city, were going to allow this inexperienced and new workforce to come onto their job sites? And people immediately jumped up and said that was premature. That's an important word. That's almost like, you know, firing an artillery shell, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
From one of them 105 howitzers or, you know, 155s or one of those big 203s. And we're always told that's premature. But Mr. Allen and I, over the last number of years, have been reviewing patterns and practice. Oops, those are legal terms. Maybe Dorsey and Whitney can help us out with that. Legal terms that indicate pattern and practice shows that public works in Minneapolis doesn't hire black folk to do anything, and the Civil Rights Department and CPED and others certainly make sure they don't get any contracts. And I repeat that. I didn't misspeak, that they don't get any contracts. So I'm puzzled how this is going to be pulled off, how we're going to put 150 to 200 youth of color in the workforce. I'm not talking about just, you know, somebody said in the meeting Wednesday, we'll have them go around sweeping the alleys and et cetera. Well, that's what public works does anyways. That's why taxpayers pay for all that big, fine equipment, you know, those big sweepers and things.
Yes.
That's their job, to go sweep the sidewalks, sweep the alleys and et cetera. And the operators who run those vehicles make nice money, like $20 an hour or better. So what is it that we will be having these young black men and women do for that $7.25? What skills will they be allowed? And will this be a part of a training procedure in which later on certain agencies will get money for allegedly training these young people?
Yeah, and that's something that we're going to have to check into, Mr. Edwards, because I don't – $7 an hour, okay, this takes me back to 1975, 76, 77, 78, and 79 when we had the Neighborhood Youth Corps here ran by Mr. Peter Hurilla, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Correct.
And, and I think we were making more back then building chip roads on the wood chip roads on the Mississippi down from Lake Street down to the water and building these garbage cans and setting them up and down Lake Street and Nicollet Mall. So it just eludes me that, you know, I know that to have that put in place, that's a long proposal process and there's a lot of variables and derivatives. And I mean, if they pull it off, more power to them, but they just seem very ill-prepared at this point. So
now that takes us to another question about the meeting last Tuesday. And, in fact, you remember we were questioned on a program three Saturdays ago about the meeting Tuesday. So I'm like you. I'd expected to see a lot of heavyweights, a lot of heavy hitters there for whatever reason they didn't make it.
Hold on, caller. We're just telling we have a call coming in, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get the caller because sometimes we have them wait too long. Let's get the caller, get the question. We'll come back to what we were talking about.
You're live on point. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Brian. I'm calling from Los Angeles. I've called in a few times before. I really just want to make a statement that, you know, something that you had mentioned about the poverty pimps is so true. And this is what a lot of people, I think in general, more importantly, though, we're talking about our community, they don't understand the true workings of a nonprofit, namely a 501c3. Now, what happens? These gentlemen, and I won't even call them gentlemen because they're taking advantage of the community. And
there's
I challenge
women involved
any,
too, sir. There are some
exactly,
involved.
Men and women, okay. Whomever it is, shame on them. But here's the inner workings of a 501c3, and it's very simple. You're only required to donate 10% of your monies that you get in to said organizations. So you see, they get to keep 80 to 90% of those funds. That is the workings of a 501c3. So that's why you probably see them riding around in these nice cars, living in nice houses, because they are only required to donate 10%. That was my statement. Thank you, gentlemen, for everything
you.
That you're doing in the community. And I appreciate it.
Sir, if you just spend a minute with us, because you're in L.A., and I know you've called a couple times over the last year.
Correct.
And as you've indicated, you're right along the lines of Mr. Allen. You are somewhat of a conservative African-American. I think we determined that in previous calls from Los Angeles.
Just a tad.
In L.A., a number of years ago, you had a very major project at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And what I understand... as an observer at court, if you will, that your African-American, Hispanic community, Asian community were very successful in this billion-dollar project at LAX.
Right.
And the reason was that you were able to create a community benefits agreement. Am I correct, or are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with that, yes. You're exactly right.
And it was driven by a community benefits agreement, and it really had the full involvement of the mayor at that time of the city, key members of your city council, and et cetera.
Right.
There seemed to have been some provisions that made sure that the poverty pimps didn't get involved. Can you just – do you have a recollection of how that was done?
Well,
not
what,
to have them involved.
Right. What had happened was is they did a complete audit of every nonprofit that wanted to be involved in the project.
Ooh,
now,
oh.
When you do a complete audit – now, again, when you do a complete audit, you audit from dollar one to dollar $5 million. So if I see that you have a car and that you're not working, but you're working for your 501c3, then a question arises. So basically they did an audit and they found out who was legitimate and who was not legitimate. I'll tell you, and I won't name names, but there is a family in Minnesota that I know of because I've had contact with one of their relatives here that has a nonprofit They claim to do work in Haiti. They claim to do work in and around, I'm sure, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis, but namely in Haiti. I offered this gentleman a package where he could help his 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that he turned it down?
Mm.
Because he had, it was a slight investment, but he would have gotten, and it was a legitimate investment, and he turned it down.
Mm.
And it would have helped his nonprofit tenfold. So it truly goes to show you they'll only work with you if you're giving them money. But if they have to make an investment in themselves and in their community, and that's essentially what you're doing is when a 501c3, you're making an investment in your community. Yourself should come, you should come last. Because when you're in a 501c3, you're helping. So why you want to help yourself to a Mercedes, why you want to help yourself to a house in the suburbs is beyond me, and not live amongst your peers whom you're helping. So, gentlemen, again, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
From California. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, it appears we asked the right question, Mr. An audit. Now, some of the – and this has certainly been a core issue against – those of us in the black blogger community, and certainly a core criticism, is that we spend too much time talking about 990s, Mr. Allen. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct.
And I know that part of what Mr. Allen has done at IBNN is that he spends a lot of time reminding us and sharing with us the 990s, which are required by law to talk in terms of how you're doing. But I'd heard the rumor of that, and I remember being in a meeting when we were allegedly preparing what we thought was going to be a community benefits agreement in the matter of Northside Settlements and what was going to be the construction of what is now UROC. And I remembered how that was sabotaged and undermined, but I remember that we had come in as a part of the committee and had pointed out what had happened at LAX, and I've been waiting for a long time, Don, really, to have someone raise a certain question to us, and then we determined that they are familiar enough with what happened out at LAX and the massive billion-dollar public works and the kind of money that poured into the black community of LA and the surrounding areas. And that audit piece, boy, I think that's capital.
Yeah, that is really a huge piece, Mr. Edwards, because I spoke earlier at almost the top of the show that, you know, the Minneapolis Foundation is under tremendous pressure to release this money to this internal group of combined agencies within the Northside Community recovery team.
Okay.
And I think that it would behoove.
Let's call it recovery zone.
The recovery
That's
zone.
That's a good military
yes.
term.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Recovery zone. Yes.
The core of the recovery
zone. The core. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so, with that said, Mr. Edwards, I think it would behoove. Well, I would put it like this: the Minneapolis Foundation do not have dummies at the table, number one. Number two, I would love to see an audit of the Stair Step Foundation, the Minneapolis Urban League, Pillsbury United Communities, African American Family Services,
OIC,
and the people at that table right now. I'd like to have them, you know, self-audit from an outside source, you know, get someone to come in. But I would love to see, and I'm not I'm alleging there's something going on, but I'm not condemning them right now. But those numbers right there will show, I think, especially from the Minneapolis Urban League, that there's a significant funding problem. There's a significant funding stream problem within these organizations. As you know, Mr. Edwards, we created a lot of stink for the Minneapolis Urban League in 2009, where Herman Lessard and people from the National Urban League came to the Minneapolis Urban League and did what they called a audit, which was paperless. So
absolutely.
So we don't know what happened, where they're at, and then we have they have the support of one of the board members who actually is a local North Minneapolis news publisher who says that the Minneapolis Urban League is in the black. But yet the Urban League cannot even house anybody. They have not given anybody, paid anybody's hotel room during the disaster in North Minneapolis. Matter of fact, on Monday the 23rd, I walked in the Urban League at exactly 10:05 a.m. and asked them that. I said, hey, I have friends that was affected by the tornado. What services do you have to assist them? And I was being told to call 311 and tell them to call 311.
Absolutely. And again, for transparency and again for our domestic and international audiences, Mr. Allen's statement can be verified by calling up on demand our program. All of the programs that we have done since our inaugurational date in May of last year can be called back up, and the entire program can be listened to. I well remember when Mr. Allen spoke about that, and in fact there were some within the core community, if you will, that thought that you were being disingenuous and that you needed to tone it down. By the way, because of articles that we here on this end and Studio A wrote as it pertains to the Urban League, it was discovered that the St. Paul Urban League, by the way, had quietly shut down. It ceased to operate. And in a copyrighted story by Vicki Nash, a staff writer for the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the United Way said, oh, yeah, said we finally had to bring it to an end because they had been on administrative probation for 6 years. 6 years. The United Way only allows you to be on administrative probation for 2 years before they defund you, but the politics were at work, okay? And that's why, Mr. Allen, I'm troubled when I start hearing core statements coming from the core group, core fundamental philosophy that we're going to put 150 to 200 black youngsters to work at $7.25, but we need to have as much as 350 to 400,000 seed money going in so that we can put things in operational shape. Yet these youngsters will be working under the auspices and supervision of the Minneapolis Department of Public Works. Am I not correct? Are you there, Mr. Allen?
What's that?
we lost you. You must be catching a call in the background.
Yes.
I was talking in terms of was the amount of dollars that being paid. Okay. And my question was, I'm confused by how that amount of money is needed when, in fact, the youngsters will be working through the auspices of the Public Works Department. We're getting a bad connection, Mr. Allen. Bad connection.
Switch headphones here real quick because I did hear your question.
Yeah, I see you there in the studio there. Yeah. Okay,
yes.
Got you.
Yes, how's that, Mr. Erwin? Was that a little bit better?
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Well, yes. Like I said, I'm trying to get a feeling for why private interests would need of the so-called core group would need $450,000 to be at hand when, in fact, we initially were told, and it's on record and it's been transcribed, that these youngsters will be working on City Works Minneapolis projects. And I'm just not understanding what the funding mechanism. You don't think that the city officials thought that based on the perceived relationship with Mayor R.T. Ryback with the Obama administration that they were going to win the appeal, do you?
Yeah, I think that they thought that R.T. was going to, you know, figure out something here, but I don't think that was the whole plan, Mr. Edwards. It's just a failed attempt. I don't understand some of the processes going on right now within the core group and the task force to even come to a adequate firing solution to correct the violent, you know, rejection of economic recovery in the North Minneapolis period. So, I mean, it's hard for me, and I'm stuttering and tripping because I can't really wrap my mind around what direction they're going. I know something big is about to pop, but what direction is it going to pop in? Is it going to pop in the pockets of who usually gets the money in North Minneapolis, or is it going to pop in the pockets of the residents that are duly, you know, should get some kind of financial relief?
Well, you know, and this ties into the statement by a member of the community who was a victim, who is homeless and et cetera, and she talked about it. We played that tape at the top of the hour. And, you know, one of the things that the group said to us sitting there as the quote-unquote committee, well, we are not a part of the core, if you will. The core, now identified in this morning's edition of Minneapolis Star Tribune, is comprised of five individuals, which one is a city official, if you will, which I have a question, by the way, Mr. Allen, about a city official being involved with a group that will probably the first week in August become a for-profit LLC, if you will. And I'm troubled by that. I'm sure that the right declarations haven't been made, but one of the things that we have been told that who are about to be purged from the committee is that in the first week in August or thereabout, there will be a redesign of the Northside Tornado Relief Committee, and that folks. Now, I need to get your sense on this, Mr. Allen. We both have worked in corporate America, et cetera. That folks who will be allowed to stay and to handle the windfall that they're expecting will be required to sign non-disclosure documents. What does that mean, Mr. Allen? I'm just an old country boy. What does that mean, that you will be forced to sign a non-disclosure document?
Oh, well, that means that what's said in the meeting stays in the meeting. It's kind of like when you go to Vegas, what's done in Vegas is stayed in Vegas. But in this case, they have no legal standing under the color of law, and not being an organized LLC or a 501c3 or doing business with proprietary information, do they have any standing to make anybody sign anything like that? And anybody
now, we've been hearing this for the last month, that at some point there will be a requirement that if you want to continue to participate and ride this gravy train, because, by the way, it already is a gravy train for those that are listening, because as Mr. Allen and I myself uncovered through our investigative efforts, joint investigative efforts, that $206,000 was handed off to individuals and entities that are members of the so-called committee, and ranging from the repair of homes to helping quote-unquote minority contractors get their sales properly certified.
Mm-hmm.
And that then brings us to the whole thing about the list, the bogus list that was put out, in which many of our residents were taken to the cleaners by shoddy contractors and et cetera who were not properly licensed. We called attention to the article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune the first week in June. And by the way, Mr. Allen and I were present when Ms. Corvell suggested, and then, in fact, I found out Mr. Allen, after she left the meeting at the Central Library, she went to another meeting with City Council Member Don Samuels. And Ms. Corvell is now saying the Star Tribune got it all wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
That the information was incorrect, it was poor reporting, poor investigative reporting, and that the list was just fine. And so I guess Ms. Corvell, director of the powerful Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, is saying that the investigative report by the Star and the examination by the Department of Labor for the state of Minnesota was flawed, right? Now, here's my question.
Okay.
If that was all true, why wasn't that declaration and a demand for a retraction made within a couple hours after that story appeared the first week in June?
Time will only tell. But, you know, you had just mentioned something about the jobs and the Urban League, Scott Gray and Velma Corbell from the Minneapolis, director of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. You know, Mr. Edwards, we both happened to be at that meeting about the, which was about totally something different, the disparity report, but I have a little bit over 3 minutes of the conversation between you and Ms. Corbell discussing this public works program that Mr. Gray is trying to implement. And I think now would be probably a good time to play that so people can hear what's going on.
Well, I think it probably would. There's been much discussion in our production meetings. And by the way, we have talked with our attorneys, of course. On Point has attorneys also. Everybody's got lawyers. And I've given the authorization that I'm very comfortable with this piece being played. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Okay. Here we go.
In terms of questions and issues being raised as far as the tornado recovery efforts on the north side,
mm-hmm.
I know that there will be work generated in the recovery efforts as a result of some public money that the city received from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. I don't know to what extent that work has been itemized. I'm glad that Mr. Gray then talked to the city about how he can get young youth of color involved in doing some of that, but that's not a compliance issue. I didn't hear a compliance issue in that at all.
Get her. So you don't see any relationship between the ordinances of the city of Minneapolis under the Civil Rights Ordinance and these arrangements with respect to the employment?
It sounds to me like Mr. Gray is out trying to figure out what he can get his young people involved in,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see that there's anything for me to get involved in at this point. There's no compliance issue there. That's his job.
No, my question was, Ms. Corbell, has your department been involved in any aspect of how the desired goals and expectations of the city in this particular proposition? Because contrary to what you just said to me, when Mr. Allen asked the question of the mayor last Wednesday, it not only had to do with contract compliance, it had to do with employment and et cetera. And I thought that the Civil Rights Department looked at issues of conformity as it pertains to employment or nonconformity.
The Civil Rights Department is always interested when there are opportunities to avail to women and minorities in this city. But unless there's a compliance issue, and I'm hearing none, I'm hearing that there seems to be some planning that's ongoing that the Urban League is doing in order to have some of its young people engaged and employed on work that may be generated as a result of the tornado recovery. But I see no compliance issue here. The Civil Rights Department has not been engaged in any compliance issue, and we wouldn't be involved in any compliance issue until there is one.
Well, let me ask you this question then. How do you deal with the issue, and one of the things Mr. Gray pointed out, that he was talking with Public Works about that aspect of sidewalks and gutters and et cetera, and you have a company that has a very significant piece of that kind of work. They have a significant understanding of their responsibility under the city's ordinance, if you will. And you're right, you probably didn't totally understand the question. My question was, how do we get these 150 youth into projects in which there are already currently contractual understandings, obligations, and commitments?
So what you're asking me is that there's a sidewalk contractor out there, and you want to know how some of those young people can join that workforce?
Correct. Without violating
without
violating contract law and without violating the understanding that the contractor has with the city relevant to their right to carry out and honor that contractual arrangement they have with the city. That was my question.
Well,
here's a mistake I made. I thought that Public Works was in consultation with the Civil Rights Department, and I'm sorry, I apologize, I'm mistaken, they weren't. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No other questions for you, Ms. Corbell, there. Ms. Edwards.
Yes, sir. And appreciate that electronic recording of the exchange between myself as a citizen of the city of Minneapolis and one of the drafters and authors of the civil rights ordinances of this city over 40 years ago. Ms. Corbell is a liar. She did a total misrepresentation, because also what Mr. Allen has on record, and operatives saw this, within a couple of minutes after that exchange between Mrs. Corbell and myself, the city's public works director was sitting way in front of Mr. Allen and myself, and the word is that he, in kind of a combination of I, contact and et cetera, was mouthing to her that we are in negotiations. Mm-hmm. Now, the genesis for the exchange between Ms. Corvell and myself was that earlier, Mr. Allen also has the electronic intercept of this. Ms. Corvell had talked in terms that nothing happens in the area of compliance, conformity, and et cetera, unless Mr. Johnny Burns, her legendary contract compliance director, knows about it. I had also asked a question, which I believe Mr. Allen has on tape, in which I asked her after she made some disparaging remarks about CPED and Mike Christensen, if there was any quote-unquote separation and if departments individually were able to go their separate ways, which they are, as Mr. Allen and I know, in adhering or not adhering to the ordinances of the city of Minneapolis. And her statement to me was that it was not. And so I was really puzzled by her misdeclarations, if you will, mm-hmm. that she didn't know anything and that Public Works was not required. The Pacific Company, by the way, and that we have certainly the attention of our audiences and et cetera, the universal contractor, the person, the company that has the contract for all sidewalks and gutters in Minneapolis, is Standard Sidewalk. And I was fascinated by the fact that she knew that I was talking about Standard Sidewalk. And she also knows that in 2007 I filed an action against Standard Sidewalk for refusing to hire African-Americans. And this is ironic, Mr. Allen, for refusing during the summer of 2007 hiring African-Americans to work on a major project in North Minneapolis, a 30-block stretch of Penn Avenue North, the same area that the tornado went through, Mr. Allen, and that it was necessary to file a declaration and a complaint of discrimination by Standard Sidewalk. And those documents are in my files. That is another story pertaining to Michael Jordan, the then director, and et cetera. Yet she lied. She misrepresented the facts, and it took the white man, the head of the Public Works Department, to signal her that she had misstepped because there were negotiations. Now, we had said to her, Mr. Allen, as we were crafting those statements in that room with only 25 people in attendance, that we were aware because Mr. Scott Gray, at two previous meetings of the so-called powerful Northside Tornado Recovery Committee, talked in terms of these very sensitive and high-powered negotiations, and when directly asked by us if the Civil Rights Department was present, he said yes. And in fact,
yes,
they are, because Johnny Burns, who was in the meeting this past Wednesday at OIC, let something slip out of the bag, which is not our responsibility to alert them to the mistake that he made. But I appreciate the fact that we captured that exchange between she and I. She is a liar, mm-hmm. and she has done everything she could to undermine the franchise of African Americans, including she was directly involved in putting together the bogus list, which led to white contractors, some unlicensed and in violation of Minnesota law. And by the way, before she became the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, she for seven years was the Commissioner of Human Rights in the state of Minnesota under former Governor Tim Pawlenty, and we know Tim Pawlenty's reputation. And so I'm going to take my medication now, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, because, even hearing that played back for me, my jaws are a little tight. You know what I'm saying, my brother? But anyways,
yeah.
I appreciate it, Mr. Al.
Oh, anytime. And, Mr. Edwards, we have a – let me see here. We're looking in Studio B here. We have about 16 minutes left in the show, and we really need to address this African-American leadership forum and what they're all about. You know, and, of course, in our perspective, I put a story up earlier this week on the 26th that said African-American leadership forum needs a reality check.
Absolutely.
And which they do, and based on everything that we've just said, Mr. Edwards, I mean, from the beginning of the show to just 60 seconds ago, not one of these line items or these topics have been addressed publicly in a transparent way by the African American Leadership Forum. I think this is a group of stratified, Southern stratified folks with their noses up in the air that frown at serving the lower one-third of the community. They're pretty much like the Republican Party. They don't let all people in. Certain people are picked to be a part of this group. And as far as solving poverty, I don't agree with anything they've done. And again, we have no group in the African-American community that has any power, any say-so, any direction. And this group happens to be on the top of the list.
And by the way, for the purpose of transparency, again, for our domestic and international listeners, Mr. Allen and I are talking about the powerful, in their own mind, the powerful African-American Leadership Alliance, who met in special party session, oops, at the Minneapolis Convention Center. They maintained 250 were in attendance. And ironically, the leader of the so-called powerful Minneapolis Tornado Recovery Team, Major Lewis King, United States Army Artillery, was one of the presenters talking about the wonderful job that he and his core team are doing in consolidating the core future and survival of the African American community in North Minneapolis. And one of the things that I was troubled by, Mr. Allen, is that some operatives were sent by us, if you will, to attempt to enter and be a part of the activities. These were professional young African Americans. I'm not talking about somebody we picked up off the boulevard or et cetera. These were professional young African Americans who were told, number one, that they weren't registered, but more importantly, they were not members of the organization, and this is a membership group with 550 members in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or the Twin Cities, Des Moines, Iowa, Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
We have since run a check on the chapters in Portland and Seattle, and Mr. Allen and I have had private conversations about what we have discovered, and, of course, we will unveil that at an appropriate time.
Yes, and I tell when people, Mr. Edwards, one of the things that people do is they criticize us for bringing this stuff to light. They says, you know, you're putting people's business in the street, and you maybe shouldn't do that, and they marginalize us, you know, sometimes. If they don't understand, it doesn't affect either one of us, but I'm going to let them go through the motions because I know I'm renting some time in their head. But,
right.
Absolutely. So, I mean, don't listen to me or Mr. Edwards. If you read the Star Tribune newspaper, go back on the internet or go call them up and get a copy of the February 16, 2011 Star Tribune story titled A 10-Year Lesson on How Not to Spend $200 Million.
Absolutely.
Now, this story focused on a costly experiment to combat poverty that had some serious problems and less than successful outcomes, okay, other than to keep a couple nonprofit agencies staffed and paid for 10 years, okay? And I'm talking about Northway Community Trust and Northwest Area Foundation's $10 million endowment over there. And the money they scattered administratively through the community. When I say the community, I meant the nonprofit community, not the people, okay? That was a complete failure, and yet
as our California caller pointed out, absolutely.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
And then you have these nonprofits. I mean, if you noticed, you know, Mr. Edwards, even the Northwest Area Foundation, they haven't had a capital fundraiser in at least the last 5 years, but they're still sitting up there. And I thought, as part of an executive director of an organization. You know, and again, I kick myself in the head because if I worked for one of these nonprofits, I'd be out doing the thing. But I'm glad, I'm kind of glad I don't. But as a head of a nonprofit, you should be out doing some fundraisers. And we have this guy, Mr. Wesley Walker, who's in charge of the Northwest Area Foundation, who has not done one capital campaign since he's been there.
This Mr. Walker, who is a Caucasian, by the way, came to us from
I'm talking about the Northwest Area Foundation, not the Northwest Area Foundation, but Wesley Walker from the Northway Community Trust.
Oh, Northway Community Trust. Yes, you said
yeah.
Northwest Area Foundation.
Yeah,
their names are almost the same. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I have you now. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and who is actually, you know, on the teat of the Northwest Area Foundation, and that Kevin Walker over there. Of course, no relation between Wesley Walker and Kevin Walker. One's white, one's black, and one runs a very powerful Northwest Area Foundation, and one runs a very marginal nonprofit on the 1200 building on West Broadway over there. But I guess my point is that, you know, these people have this African-American leadership summit. I mean, I don't think all the people. Well,
Alliance is an alliance. We don't want to. We don't want to confuse them with the African-American summit, ecumenical church leadership group that's been around 13 years or so.
Yeah, and they had it out. It's the African-American Leadership Alliance, and they had the African-American AALF, African-American Leadership Forum. The first thing is there are no African-American leaders in the Twin Cities. There are spokespersons. There's HNICs, which means head Negroes in charge. And there are some busted poverty pimps and clergy. Okay, if there was adequate or sufficient or proactive black leadership here in the Twin Cities, we would not have the situations or the disparities. Would not, like, if the police, Minneapolis police, tase and kill somebody on the sixth floor of the YMCA who happens to be an African-American youth or male, you know, we would have agencies that would say, hey, what happened here? We demand an explanation, and the power of many would denote an answer from the Minneapolis police department. It would denote an answer from the mayor's office and from the police chief's office. But what?
Let me just do this again for transparency, Mr. Allen, because we were driving this issue this time last year. One of the things that Mr. Allen and I found out last year, after a young African American was tasered to death and beaten to death by police on the sixth floor of the Y. We found out, and we talked about it. Again, all these can be recaptured by calling up all of our programs on demand. We officially asked the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department under color of law to initiate an immediate investigation to determine the possible violation of the gentleman, Mr. Smith. We did not realize, listening audience, what we had uncovered until we found out that Velma Corvell, the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, was a member of the Y board and actually obstructed the implementation of her own ordinance.
Yes.
She obstructed it.
Yes,
the law
did.
Is very clear with respect to a request for an examination, investigation. For about a week or so, we couldn't understand. We couldn't reach responsible people at both Ys. And then, lo and behold, we got a hold of the board of directors, and there was Velma Corvell as a member of the executive committee, if I'm not mistaken, of the Y board.
Yep. It's incredibly crazy. I mean, just the whole thing. And getting back, you know, with a few minutes left here, and we're going to close out. But you know, with that said, there's enough evidence down that you could look, or documented, I should say, that you can look and see a pattern of nonconformity, noncompliance, no directions, no proaction, nothing taken to address the disparity. See, here in the Twin Cities, Mr. Edwards, as you know, there's a small black population, okay?
Yeah.
It's siloed up. But just think now, if all those walls of the silos just fell and a core group came together and says, okay, we're going to address this, address that. This stuff would be wrapped up. We wouldn't have police beating a stew out of black folks, tasing them and killing them in the middle of the streets. We'd have African-American or black, whatever you prefer, in human resource areas where they would get jobs, okay?
Absolutely.
Council member Don Samuels would make North Minneapolis a fair tax zone so that people that worked in the community took home 100% of what they earned, but they were taxed on what they brought, and it would attract big corporations into North Minneapolis. But again, something that the Star Parker had said a while back, you know, that some of these folks, especially here, the DFL political plantation, They're in the business of making sure poor people remain poor and dependent on the government welfare, which is now in Minnesota pretty much cut off because the state's on a shutdown.
So, a big shutdown. Over 22,000 employees furloughed right out, no jobs, woke up this morning with no income coming in, if you will. By the way, Don, did you say you were going to play the Star Parker a piece for her out of California?
Yes, I would love to play that. I'd love to play it. We have just enough
time.
Why don't
we do that? We have about 5 minutes left. Why don't we do that?
Yes, this is Star Parker, recorded on the Willie Lawson Show in Tampa, Florida. Interview with Star Parker.
There were, when we were talking about the African American, the black community and black leaders, one of those organizations that frankly we struggle with here in my area and areas around the country is the Urban League. They seem to have meshed with a lot of course the black pastors we're talking about and the so-called black leaders in the community to have that liberal coalition that makes it, you're right, political social suicide to go up against them. Recently, you had some comments about the Urban League, and I wanted to see kind of how those were playing out and what you were hearing about them.
Well, what we know is that there is an agenda of a secular statist mentality. You know, I describe it basically as the cultural war being two sides vying for space. You have a biblical worldview that was set in our rule of law as a nation. But you, on the other side, you have a secular worldview that doesn't like the fact that God said, here are the boundaries, here are the rules, and that our founders thought that they were important enough to thread them through our Declaration and into our Constitution so that the role of government was limited to protecting our interests, to protecting us from our neighbor's sin. The rest of it is up to us. To live free, you have to be responsible. But there's a war against that. And so you have those that have this agenda to their core, the secular statist agenda. But then, think about the old slave plantation. There are 4 million slaves in the country, and they live in this plantation. And this, the owner, let's put him where that secular statist is. But you had overseers where their exclusive job was to keep those slaves in place. And that's where I would categorize the Urban League and many of the other civil rights organizations, as well as the People for the American Way and the ACLU and the all of the media. They're like the old plantation overseer. So that if anybody decides they're going to talk about freedom or anybody decides that they really want difference and change, that person is brought before the rest, kind of like what they used to do when somebody would run away up the underground. They catch them, they bring them back, they bring all the other slaves out to watch them strip the skin off of that slave's back and bruise them forever so nobody else would ever try to run away. That's where I put the Urban League. They have shaken down corporations in this country, multiple millions of dollars, and their exclusive job now is to keep poor people poor. They keep them on the plantation and to keep them in a victim mentality.
And that was Star Parker talking about the liberal Urban League and the agenda there that they have. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Well, they need to get in quick. We've only got a minute and a half. Go ahead. Who is it?
You're online. Go ahead.
Larry Tucker. Good morning, guys. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mr. Tucker.
Real good, Mr. Tucker.
About 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah. I love your show. Keep up the good work. And the Urban League was never designed to assist African-American poor, the bottom third of our population, as Mr. Edwards are totally aware of.
Absolutely.
But keep up the good work, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, Mr. Allen, I want to say quickly, the television program Black Focus tomorrow, we will be taking a look, interestingly enough, at a significant attempt to undermine one of the few successful black businesses that we have in the Twin Cities, and particularly on the north side, Louisiana Chicken. We will talk a little bit about a civil rights organization that did everything they could to destroy that franchise and undermine the activities of the black owner. So that's one of the things we'll be talking about on Sunday. And on our radio broadcast on Sunday at 3, we'll be talking about the lockout of the NBA and the NFL.
Yes.
And the fact that everyone is staying away from the race card.
Okay, and I'd like to invite everybody to read the Independent Business News Network and Mr. Edwards' column in the Spokesman Recorder newspaper. You've been listening to On Point. We'll be back next Saturday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thanks for having us in your homes today, and happy 4th of July.
Yes, sir. God bless America.
Yeah.
Put your bad stuff bad louder. Take you eyes.